Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and once again, we are joined by Fearless Fred Kennedy for another road report. I had a great time chatting with Fred last week when he was on the show, and lo and behold, he was able to come back on and chat with us once again on this revised version of the road report, which I'm really enjoying. And once again, we had a very cool, casual conversation. We just let the conversation flow, and we end up in some really cool places, which is really what this podcasting stuff is all about, right? Now, we're closing in on episode 200 very soon, which is a pretty awesome to think about when we can look back and think of how far we've come. And I hope all you folks who have tuned in have had some good times with us, some good laughs. And we fully intend to keep coming at you with fresh content to keep you entertained, so stay tuned. Now, once again, be sure to subscribe, to rate, and review the show if you like the show. And even if you don't like the show, tell us you don't like it. Tell us what we could do different. And, of course, feel free to drop us a line on all the different platforms of social media that we are on. So, once again, big shout-out and thanks to Fearless Fred Kennedy. It's great to have him on the show. He's a great storyteller. And I could talk to him for days. And of course, if you like what you hear on this podcast, check out his podcast, Issue Zero. It's a blast. I love it. So without further ado, Road Report with Fearless Fred Kennedy. Thanks, everybody, and take care. How's it going, buddy? Yeah, how was your day today?
All right.
Yeah, I tuned in on my way home from work, and I heard about the governor's elbow, and I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, the birds. That's something that I actually do. I lie to my children all the time. Okay, you know when you're driving to Niagara Falls, not the Skyway, but there's like another bridge after the Skyway, and it's like almost like a causeway, and it's like up, and then it curves to the side a bit.
Okay.
Well, we have convinced our children that is called the Magic Banana Bridge. And when you're driving over the Magic Banana Bridge, it's good luck to hold a banana over your head and yell, banana, 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 banana. And that is because when the settlers came hundreds of years ago, They were led there by a magic banana that told them to build a bridge shaped like a banana there.
So does having kids just give you a lot of practice of being creative on the spot, or was that just the gift you had from before?
I had that gift before, but it's fun because they believe that stuff and they think it's cool and they do it too. Like I was telling one of my friends at work today, like my favorite thing about watching the kids play is the dialogue. Like when they have like two action figures that are fighting and then the action figures will talk. And that's my favorite thing. And we have a video of my oldest and he's not even two. And he's got these two toys from the Octonauts. I don't know if you've ever heard of that show.
No.
But it's a Canadian cartoon and it's like this cartoon about these underwater explorers called the Octonauts, and they have a big octopus-shaped submarine that they have adventures in, and the cat, his name is Quasi, and the captain is Captain Barnacle, and it's a really good show. It's from this couple in Vancouver. It started as children's books. Miomi, I think, is their working name that they call themselves, but the books are amazing, incredible art, and they always have little nods to Dungeons and Dragons in the books, which is rad because this was like 13 years ago before, you know, Dungeons and Dragons had that massive explosion of popularity. Mm-hmm. But they and he was like he's like talking about, no, Quasi, you can't do it. Yes, ha, 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 ha. And he's not even two. He's got this crazy dialogue going on. I love it. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So I think my kids are just ripe for that stuff.
So you don't have to convince your kids to fan out with you. They just have it in their genes naturally.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
They're looking for things. They're super into Star Wars right now. Like, super, super into Star Wars.
So that just gives you all of the excuses to your wife to be able to do all those things that maybe you'd want to do. Because we got to do it for the kids. Like, we can't. Yeah. It's not for me.
Well, she likes it, too. She's pretty.
Okay, that's cool.
She's pretty fan to me herself. Not quite to the same extent that I am, but she really likes it, and she likes the stories, and she likes that the kids like it and ask questions. And they have some real philosophical discussions without even realizing they're having philosophical discussions, or something that my six-year-old brought up to me yesterday about Anakin and his fall to the dark side, and he kind of tied it all into the whole idea that Jedi can't be in relationships and whatnot. And he was talking about how that Anakin was so scared of losing Padme, and then so that's why he joined the dark side, and then joining the dark side is what ended up killing Padme. And so that's why Darth Vader is so angry, because he's angry that he made a mistake and he hurt everybody that he loved. And I'm like, you're six. What are you doing?
Have you?
And the thing was, to give you full disclosure,
yeah,
this conversation happened while I was having a shower and he was pooping.
That's the best. Those are the best conversations, to be quite honest. If we're going to be honest, that's where the real conversations in family happen.
The realest of the real, you know?
Yeah. Everybody's vulnerable. Everything's just, you're at your weakest, most vulnerable point. So might as well just say what you're thinking.
Absolutely.
Have you read, you probably did, the Darth Vader book called Dark Lord? It takes place immediately after Revenge of the Sith. Did you happen to read that one?
No, I have not, but I read the comics. It was Kieran Gillian wrote the comics that came out right after. I did read those.
Okay.
The first four trades.
Okay.
It kind of like soft introduced Dr. Aphra, but I kind of fell off it. I didn't like it or enjoy it. I just found some. I think that was when I started reading East of West, and I like went super deep into East of West.
I tried to get into East of West, and I felt like I wasn't smart enough to get it.
You know what? I feel like I'm going to piss people off by saying this. I feel like there's a lot of times in comics where someone will want to write something really smart and clever, and they'll just leave a lot of vagueness and let you piece it together, and then no matter what you piece together, it's right. And I am not a fan of that stuff, but I just loved that book so much because it was such a cool concept. That was the type of book that I know if I had pitched the exact same pitch, I know I wouldn't have got it because I'm just not that important. But it's great. I love that book, you know?
I might give it another try in the future. Sometimes you just have to read something at that right moment where it resonates. Oh, now I get it. Now I understand what's going on.
Did you read Why the Last Man?
I read the first two or three trades of it, and then I wanted to collect it in a better format, but I haven't gotten around to finishing the series.
All right, well, then I'm not going to... But my thing that I just said about putting a lot of things out there and then not really explaining it, being like, hey man, I gave you all the pieces, you need to figure it out. That's right. Kind of how I feel about Why the Last Man.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say what happened. You can read it yourself.
Okay. I didn't purposely do it last time we spoke, but I felt like I needed to elaborate a little more, or let you elaborate a little more about 100 Bullets, because you said it was your favorite comic book series of all time, and you got onto it once it was just about finished and you binged it. So tell me why you love that book so much.
I'm gonna I'm going to put a disclaimer on it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things in that book that would be deemed very inappropriate now.
Right.
It deals with sexual violence.
Yeah.
It really does. And it's definitely, I think my producer for my podcast, Dila, she always calls things like that a boy story, and I think it definitely is. But I love how the story evolves, and it starts out as just a straight-up revenge story. Like, have you ever read it?
No, I haven't. I'm 50-50 on Azzarello.
Give you the pitch that anybody who asks about it, I would give. Okay, in your life, in everyone's life, there's always been one moment where you know that if things had just gone differently, that one time, your whole life would be so much better than it is right now. Well, what if somebody showed up at your door with a briefcase, and inside that briefcase was a bunch of evidence that showed that when that one thing went wrong, it was somebody else screwing your life over. And there was a gun and 100 bullets of completely untraceable ammunition. And they could be in a restaurant having dinner in a crowded restaurant with 20 people, and you could walk up to them in front of everyone and pop them full of lead and walk out, and nothing would happen. What would you do? That's how it starts. But how it evolves and what it becomes is something so completely different, and you don't even realize it's happening. It just does. And it's just incredible. And one of my favorite lines in comic books ever is in there. And it was, there's a character named Jack, a.k.a. the Monster, and Lono, a.k.a. the Dog. And they're about to fight. And people are, like, talking about who's going to win. And someone goes, that's a tough call. One of them can't feel pain, and the other one can't live without it. And it's just like, oh, Brian Azzarello, that's so good. And I know that sounds like, I don't know, but it's just the way the dialogue and the lettering work on the page and the way it draws your eyes with those lines and the shadowing. And it's Eduardo Rizzo doing the art. And Eduardo Rizzo he's probably my favorite comic artist of all time.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, because, like, I love Ron Lim, and I think he's amazing and incredible.
Yeah.
But Ron Lim is that era for me.
Right, right.
Whereas I would, to this day, if you were like, okay, Eduardo Rizzo says he wants to do blank book with you, will you do it? I don't care what is in that blank, I'm doing it, period.
Right. So that's your dream collaboration.
Not my dream collaboration. I just think he's amazing. I love Eduardo Rizzo. To be honest, I don't know if the story I would write would be the story that is his art would need to be used for, you know, because he's so good with black. And actually, yeah, I'd write like a historical fantasy horror story if I worked with him, and I would set it in colonial North America, like. Early colonial, pre-colonial, war colonial. Nice. Super dark. Super, super dark.
So Eduardo Rizzo, even over Adam Gorham. I'm going to tell him next time I see him.
You know what? If you told him that, he'd be like, he was talking about 100 bullets, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love Adam.
Yeah, Adam's a great guy.
Adam's like one of the best people I know, period. Not even as a comic book person, but just as a human being, he's one of the greatest individuals ever.
Yeah, he...
Shane Aaron also goes on that list, by the way, of just great people.
Okay, he's one of the few people who listen to this, so he'll appreciate that. Hi, Shane.
Oh, Shane's the best. He's just, like, I'm an emotional guy, and I often feel like everything I touch comic-wise inevitably implodes. And when I'm emotionally drained, Shane is the guy that I go to. And in a creative field like this, you need not a cheerleader is not the right point, but just a guy whose shoulder you can just like lean on and be like, what am I doing? And they'll go, No, doing this. Here's why. Because he's Shane and he's the best guy.
That sounds like, no, it's like this and that's all there is to it. Just shut up and do it. Yeah, that's Shane.
Absolutely. I love Shane.
Yeah, I love him too. He's on this show quite a bit, and he's always he's not cheerleading me and our other buddy Martin, who also has a podcast, but he's always making sure, like, you know, why don't you guys do something? Why don't you guys try this? And he's always more than willing to record with us. So we love Shane. And you guys are doing Morris together, right? Or eventually that's going to come out once these shows get going again, it's going to be released. I thought that was the Western you were referring to last time we spoke. I thought that was the Western with your buddy.
Okay, here's my problem. Shane and I talked about Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, let's do an issue. And I said, okay. Yeah. And then because I'm an idiot, I gave him this like 62-page script. So that's me. That's me. I'm a moron. My problem is that I get so excited. I get all these toys in front of me and I throw all this stuff down. And I'm just like, oh, this and this, and we'll add this and we'll put this in there. We'll do that. We'll do that. I will say that my panel count is always low. I seldom, if ever, put more than 7 panels on a page ever. I like to stick at 5. That to me is the magic number, 5. But I the story we wrote, like, it got kind of big. And I think that when you're doing indie comics, you got to be smart. And I was stupid. I think that's the problem. And I've never brought it up to Shane because I felt bad about it.
But
I felt bad. I really felt bad because I feel like what happens when you're doing indie stuff is that it's all tit for tat, right? It's collaborative, and you feel obligated to carry it because the other person carried it, and so I carried it for this many pages, and now I put him in a position where he feels that he's got to do it, and maybe he can, and he's got Cauldron going, and it's like, I feel like a dummy. I shouldn't have done that. You know?
Well, whenever we talk about Morris, he's always saying that that's the script he's going to work on next. So I don't.
Oh well, okay, all right.
Yeah,
let's move on then. That's that.
That's that. When you said you were working on a Western last conversation, I thought that was specifically the one. So I'm like, all right, let's give Shane a little shout out. But enough of that guy. He's always on my show. Are you missing the Comic Cons and the TCAFs and all that stuff?
You know, man, yes and no.
Yeah.
I feel there are times I feel embarrassed because people will come by and they'll be like, what do you got that's new? And it's like, I got nothing. And it's because I worked on just putting pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch. I kind of just, like, I was beating my head against the wall and getting rejection after rejection after rejection. And then books that would get greenlit, and then COVID happened, and then they implode. And then other projects that got greenlit, and then issues happened with artists, or pages didn't come in, and then we missed our deadline, and then things that I had said were coming didn't come, and I look like an asshat for it, and then my reputation is hit. And then I feel like anytime it's like, what are you working on? This. Oh, like the thing you said you were going to do last time that didn't happen?
Yeah.
But right now, Ricky Lima and I are working on a book that would have been ready for Fan Expo, but I don't think Fan Expo is going to happen. So we'll have it at the Christmas show for sure.
That's dope.
And we're working with an artist from the States on it, and she's fantastic. Great at cartooning. Super simple, super bubbly. And the cover is going to come from Leslie Doyle. And, okay, I'll tell you everything you want to know about this. Because Ricky and I think it's the most ridiculous thing ever.
Yeah.
It's called Relatable Young Adult Mystery Comic.
Okay. Tell me about it.
And the comic is a group of school kids in elementary school that solve mysteries together that are completely nonsensical. And there's a character called New Kid whose parents are zombies that work at the zombie factory. And they're they feel new. And then there's Cool Kid, who's cool and rides a motorcycle, which is fascinating because it's elementary school.
Right.
And they also smoke. And one of their enemies is Old Man Jorts, who is an old man with a ponytail who wears jean shorts. There's also Love Triangle Girl, who's constantly caught in a love triangle. And then there's Tech Wiz, who is good at math and science. There's also Spooky Beth, who pees ghosts. And they solve mysteries. And that is the comic. And the way Ricky and I wrote it was we went back and forth with a few different ideas that I was kind of tinkering with in the old tickle truck there.
Right.
And this was the idea that we settled on. And we were thinking of doing, like, an ash can. Then we thought about doing an anthology with a bunch of different mysteries with these characters. And so then we decided we were going to do a story where the first 12 pages were written by me, and then the next 12 were written by him, and the next 8 were written by me, and then the next 8 written by him, and then 4, and 2, and then 1.
Okay.
So that's the way we wrote it.
I like it. You get closer and closer to having to collaborate as it gets to the end.
Passing the baton. Yes, but the thing that we decided was there would be no collaboration. At no point would I give him notes, and at no point would I say, this is what I want to have happen.
Okay.
He would just write his stuff. I would write mine. And it was like comic book telephone. It just had to figure out a way to make it work. And that's what we did.
And how did it turn out?
I think it's hilarious.
I'll be honest, it sounds crazy and ridiculous, but I definitely am going to read it because...
Yeah, I think it's very funny.
Okay.
And it's very... it's very effortlessly funny. It just flows very well, and at no point do you feel pushed around by what's happening.
Okay. What's it called again?
Relatable Young Adult Mystery Comic.
Okay. And it'll definitely be ready for the Christmas show.
Yes. It would be ready for, well, at this point, like, we wanted to have, ideally the Kickstarter was going to be going on right now, but we felt it in poor taste to launch a Kickstarter while all this is going on. And that's not me saying that if you started a Kickstarter, you shouldn't have done it.
Absolutely,
like, dude, I get it. It's all good. We're all doing what we can. Just we thought that we didn't want to do this right now. So we kind of eased up on it a little bit, and now we're just taking her easy. Just waiting, relaxing, you know.
Right.
It'll come.
Yeah. No, you know what, Fred? To be honest, like, you... All of the ideas and rejections you get, they will come back around. Like, it's just you're putting that energy out there for something to come back. When you quit doing
that...
That's
what Ricky always says. He goes, when I talk to him, he goes, when you talk about the Kickstarter and the pitching, you're so down. But as soon as you start talking about the story, you get so excited.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's all I want to do is just tell stories.
Yeah. And don't stop doing that. Because, I mean, you have your day job. You're successful at your actual job that you do. You're also a good storyteller and writer. Like, I read Teuton. That was a solid story from two guys. That was, what, your first comic, 12 issues that you and Adam did?
Yeah, it was my first, like, full-on comic. I did a comic, I don't know if you ever read it, like, a decade ago, with Andre Fernandez, who's a great dude, fantastic artist. Lives in Markham. I don't know how much comic book stuff he's doing now. He became a dad, and I think he kind of pulled back a bit.
Right.
We did a comic called Helos that was sort of like a post-apocalyptic bio of Saladin. It was like one of my favorite historical figures.
Sorry, did you cut out? I thought I wasn't sure if I lost you.
Oh, no, I, So here, maybe I lost you.
No.
It was called Helos, and it was just like a post-apocalyptic version of Saladin is really all it was.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't get a chance to read that, and I need to pick up a copy of Fourth Planet because the description of it sounds awesome, and I have the three volumes of Teuton.
I actually was just the artist on that book, Miko.
Yeah,
he's living in Poland now, and him and his girlfriend are—I don't even know if I should talk about it because it's not really my book. But he sent me this comic that he worked on with his girlfriend, Danielle, who's an incredible artist as well, by the way. Like, they're going to have a child that will be the one for art. But the pages he sent me of this book, like, it's all black, white, and red. The whole thing. And it involves demons and religious iconography. And, dude, it's when this comes out, I think it's going to be called Saint Nicholas.
Okay.
I think that's what he's calling it. And when it comes out, holy Christmas. it's fantastic. Like, it's an acid trip. It's wild. I was tinkering with him about a story about the siege of Vienna in 1863. And I've got a cover for it, and we've just batted ideas back and forth about what we want to do. Because I'm not sure if you're aware about the siege of Vienna in 1683.
No,
I'm not. But it's like, what's frustrating about that storyline is, even if you go on YouTube right now and try and watch videos about it, it'll turn into the comment section, will turn into these like Islamophobic, neo, trying to take over the world and all this stuff. And it's like, if you know the history, those elements are present. But that's not what that was really about. It really comes down to the unequivocal hatred between the Ottoman Empire and the Habsburg dynasty, the Holy Roman Emperors.
Right.
And the numbers and the, like, the 1683, the Siege of Vienna, that's what the Siege of Gondor is based on, like, to the T. When the cavalry show up at the very end to save the day.
Right.
That was the Polish cavalry charge, the Flying Hussars. The largest cavalry charge in human history, period, happened there. And when the Rohirrim show up and they're like, ride for ruin, ride for death, ride for glory, that's it. Like, that's what it was. And it broke the Ottoman legions and they... Not legions, that's Rome, but it broke the Ottoman besiegers and they retreated. It's pretty fascinating. And the story about, like, the city was, it was going to surrender. Like, it was inevitable that surrender was going to happen within 2 or 3 days. Like, it was inevitable. Like, the writing was on the wall. The defense was insane. Like, there was 10,000 people in this, like 10,000 soldiers in the city. And of that, almost half of them had plague and illnesses and dropsy and, like, the, what did they call it? Blood fever is what they called it. And they managed to hold off an army of 150,000 for close to 3 months. It's just, it's insanity. And so you've got, like, these three aspects that you can tell the story from.
Right.
There's people under siege, the people laying siege, and then the nobility frantically trying to organize a relief force.
Right.
Which was the real heroes of that relief force have to be the Polish. Like the Polish and Lithuanian force. Like the Lithuanian force, I could be butchering history here because my screenplay's not in front of me, but the Polish really saved the day. The Lithuanian relieving force kind of got bogged down and delayed and didn't make it in time to be of significant use until they were chasing the Turkish away. By that point, the battle was over. But it's just, oh, dude, it's a... And because Miko's Polish, like, for him, this is a big deal. So right, he's super into the story. And it's just a fascinating examination of the best of times and the worst of times and the greatest traits of humanity and the worst traits. And you had, and they, it's like that dichotomy of Ottoman Turks and Muslims fighting Christians is not accurate, because almost a quarter of the Ottoman force were Protestant.
Right.
That were treated better by the Ottomans than they were by the Habsburg Catholic Holy Roman Empire.
Right.
And it's just a fascinating piece of history.
There's a lot of nuance to it. It's not just black and white.
So much going on.
Right.
So much going on. Yeah. Like, unbelievable cruelty on both sides. Unbelievable humanity on both sides. Each side firmly believing they were in the right for what they did. Which is, like, why we gravitated towards Game of Thrones the way we did. Because there were no good guys and there were no bad guys. Like, everyone thought they were the good guy, you know? Even Ramsay Bolton thought he was the good guy.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring up the dichotomy point, where it's like, I find big moments in history that we look back on and tell our stories about. Like, I just finished watching Waco, which is not a long time ago. But you watch that story and you think by what you've been told about it, you know everything you need to know. But you watch it, yeah. And there's clearly a dichotomy of two ideas of people who are trying to prove themselves right and have reason to both believe in what they're believing, because they're making each other believe it more in what they're doing. And when you look at the nuance and the dichotomy of it, the truth is in the middle. But a lot of times we like to see it's only a one-sided thing. There's the fundamental thing of it. There's the absolute thing of it. And that's where people get into their comment section of wanting – people are more concerned about being right than actually understanding anything.
Totally.
Yeah.
And can we just say congrats to Taylor Kurtz for finally landing one? Like, that guy is awesome, and he's been in so many good things that have bombed, and so many, like, big-budget, highly-touted garbage things that, like, did nothing good for his career, like – he was in the second season of True Detective. Ah, poor guy. He was in John Carter of Mars, which was an amazing movie that bombed.
Right.
He was in Battleship. And now finally he's in, because he's a good actor. He reminds me of Ryan Reynolds. Like, it took forever for him to get something huge that landed.
Right.
You know?
Right, right. Yeah, it's true.
Taylor Kitsch is great.
Yeah. Did you watch Waco?
I have not seen it yet. It is on my list. It's like number 3 on the list right now.
Yeah. It's one of those ones that gets you definitely – it works you – it worked me up anyways. I got worked up about it, and you don't know what to feel. You know what? It's one of those that leave you like, I don't know where to go now. I don't know what to think about this. But the information is important.
Waco was the big incident that's what, quote-unquote, woke up Alex Jones. That's when he began his hatred of big government and conspiracies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, look at McVeigh says that was his inspiration too, right? Like, what you're trying to do right here, you don't know what the domino effect is later on.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, man, we could talk forever, bro. This is fun. I appreciate you doing this after you talk all day at work. You still have the time.
Yeah, but I don't get to talk about this stuff at work.
I know. That's true. Hey, anytime you want to be on.
I'm going to hit the mic at 5:10 and be like, listen, guys, 1683 in Vienna. Let's break it down. So, by the way, there's a really good book, and I read 3 books about Vienna 1683, and 2 of them were very, very like, and the Muslims wanted to come and butcher everybody. And it's like, not really. It's not. Yeah, there was a lot of. Yeah. But there's one of them that was called Enemy at the Gate. Not Enemy at the Gates, like that, like movie about Stalingrad, but Enemy at the Gate, the Habsburgs and the Ottomans. And if you want to, really does take a look at both sides and accept that there's a lot of good and a lot of evil on both the sides of this battle line. Like, that's always the one. And it's also very analytical.
Okay.
And historical. It's a guy who spent years living, so.
Okay. All right, so I'll look into that. I don't know if you were able to look into that book that I sent you about
the culture. That was 2 days ago, man.
No, I know you didn't read it. I just was saying if you looked it up, like, to see what it was about, if it interested you. Not that you read
it. That took us just up my alley.
Okay.
Who's on the phone? Is someone on the phone with us?
Yeah. Hello?
Who is it?
I don't know. You invited me to this call. This is Sean Clayson.
Oh, no, dude. I don't know what you're doing on here. Like, my phone must be bouncing around in my lap. Sean, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Good. I'm just doing a podcast interview. I have no idea how it invited you onto this chat.
This is awesome.
All right, cool, man. Well, I'll leave you to that.
Okay, Sean, have a great day. I hope you're doing well and you're healthy.
Take care, Sean.
You too. Take care, man.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Oh, that was awesome.
I have no idea how that happened.
Is that one of your contacts?
Yeah, he used to be on the radio with me. He's a great guy.
Okay, awesome. That's hilarious. I that happened to me one time. I was interviewing Andrew Iden. I don't know if you know who he is. He wrote March, the biography about John Lewis, the civil rights guy. Yeah. So I got a chance to speak to him at Mocha Fest. And while we were walking the floor, he said, "We can interview, but you got to walk the floor with me because I want to look around." And then Dean Haspiel bumped into him, and they started to chit-chat, just like buddies. And I didn't know at the time who Dean Haspiel was, but I have him just having a regular conversation on the podcast. Now I look back, I'm like, son of a bitch, I wish I would have known who I was talking to. But
oh, dude, I just pulled into the driveway, though, man.
No problem, dude. You have a good night. Have a great rest of the week at work, and hopefully we can do this again soon. This is a blast, bro. I enjoy it very much.
Awesome, buddy. You have a good one, man.
You too, man. Have a good night.